Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Chof Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur, the second line from the top of Daf Chof Vav, at the Mishnah. Before we begin the actual Mishnah, we glance at the side under our Nosei, the topic heading. You will notice we've written Li'el before Huskar Dugmois Shelanoshim. There was mention made of different men, Shelo Yisu, that shouldn't marry particular women. Hachochom Shelohitir Haneder. If you will recall, we learned about a sage that was approached by a woman who had vowed not to benefit from her husband, or whose husband was forbidden to benefit from, and the Chochom, the sage, was unable to rescind that vow. So we learned that the sage should not marry that woman, because that would create suspicion that the only reason he was unable to rescind the vow because he himself was interested in marrying her. Likewise, Hamevi get mechutz laretz, v'chule, etc. We had a case of a messenger, an emissary, who brought a divorce document, a get, from abroad to the land of Israel, and his testimony of b'fonai nechtav u'b'fonai nechtam was essential in order for the get to be considered acceptable, to have been done lishma. His statement was a verification of that it was done with the proper intent. Without his statement, the get would not be acceptable. So since the entire divorce was dependent on him exclusively, on that agent, we don't want him marrying the woman, because it would create suspicion that he had a vested interest in testifying about the get's acceptability. Kan, we continue in our note, Kan muvo mikrim shel heter. In our Mishnah, we're going to be looking at those very cases, but pointing out a circumstance where, in fact, those men would be able to marry the woman. So now we turn to the Mishnah. V'chulam. V'chulam is a reference to all those men that we learned previously. The Chochom and the Mevi Get, Shehoyu Lohem Noshim, that at the time the incident took place, the aforementioned incidents, whether it's the Chochom being approached to annul the vow, or the emissary who was bringing the divorce document, if at that time those men were married, Umesu, and then subsequently their wives died, mutoros linose lohem. So then these women will be allowed to marry. V'chulom shenisu l'achirim, and the women in question, the woman who was divorced through the get brought from abroad, or the woman who couldn't continue living with her husband because of the vow, and she went and married someone else, some outsider. V'nizgarshu oy shenis almanu, and they were then divorced from their second husbands, or their husbands died, leaving them as almonas, leaving them as widows. Mutoros linose lohem. So then the men mentioned before, the sage or the agent of bringing the get, they can now marry those women. It's quite clear then that whenever there's a mitigating factor which it eliminates the issue of suspicion, so then the marriage between the woman and those men is okay. V'kulon mutaros livneim olachem. All of the women that we mentioned are allowed to marry the sons of, or the brothers of, the aforementioned sage or emissary. So that even though we saw before the basic case of suspicion, with these variations, the woman will be able to marry the man. In other words, if we have any of these mitigating factors, the suspicion is reduced or is removed altogether, and the marriage can take place. The Gemara now focuses on the opening of the Mishnah, and we have little arrows to connect the two rows. Mesu in Nizgar Shulo. The Mishnah had mentioned that, let's just focus on one of the examples to make things easier. The sage who was approached to rescind the vow that prohibited the woman to be with her husband. That sage who did not rescind the vow, so we said that the woman is prohibited to marry him. However, the Mishnah said that if that particular rabbi had a wife and then she died, the sage could marry this woman. We infer right now, Mesu in Nizgar Shulo, if that woman, the wife of the Chacham, died, then yes. If the Chacham divorced his wife, then no, then he cannot marry this woman. Omar le Rav Hillel Ravashi, v'hotanya afilu nizgarshu. But do we not have a Tanaic source that says that even if the rabbi divorced his wife, he is allowed to marry this woman? Lo kashya. So the Gemara says there's no contradiction between the Mishnah and the inference from the Mishnah and this brisa. Ha de havoi k'tota, ha de lo havoi k'tota. It depends. If there had been strain and controversy and argument between the rabbi and his wife before the incident of this woman with the vow, so then the divorce is related to their own inability to live together in harmony. Nothing to do with this rabbi's interest in this particular woman. So that if there was arguments and fighting between husband and wife, between the rabbi and his wife, before the incident of vow rescinding came up involving this particular woman, so then when the rabbi divorces his wife, he will be allowed to marry this woman. However, our Mishnah, from which we inferred that only if the rabbi's wife dies, but not if he divorces her, that is given a situation where there had been no fighting before this woman showed up. If that be the case, then the divorce seems suspicious in our eyes, that he is divorcing her because he wants to marry this particular woman. Now, we should point out, just by way of as a side point, that you see from this Gemara that even though bigamy or polygamy was allowed in the time of the Gemara, it seems that it wasn't something that people desired. People, that it was let's say general way of life, because if it was, then this particular answer would be hard to understand. Therefore, this idea of his divorcing his wife in order to marry her would be, as I say before, would be best understood if in general people didn't live a bigamous life to begin with, and therefore the divorce without having had an argument beforehand would appear to be suspicious, that it was only in order to take in this particular woman. V'iboyasema, another approach, ha v'ha, delo havoy tota. The two sources, the inference from our Mishnah and the Braisa, which seemed to be contradictory, are not. It depends on who started the fighting. So that the argil who, if, you know, let's go over this point again. This according to this resolution, the two sources are that in fact there was no fighting beforehand. The fighting between the rabbi and his wife started after this woman with her vow case came in front of the rabbi. We will tell you, however, that if argil who, if he started the fighting, then we will not allow him to marry the woman with the vow. We're suspicious that he started the strain between his wife to serve as grounds for divorcing her out of convenience in order to marry this woman. However, Hoda Argilo, he, if the wife of the rabbi started the strain and the disharmony, so then you see that the rabbi's subsequent divorce of her isn't something that's related to the woman. It wasn't something that he started with any personal intention. Rather, his wife started some type of controversy in their house, and that's the only reason he divorced his wife. V'kulon shenisu v'chulei. Our Mishnah mentioned that if the women in question concerning whom there was this element of suspicion, if they married others and then were divorced by their second husbands, or became almonas, or their husbands died, so then we say they are mutoros. The men surrounding whom there would have been suspicion are now mutar, allowed to marry the women. Kosalka daitoch, the thinking at this point is that this Mishnah is in fact a continuation of the Mishnah back on Daf Chof Hei Omid Aleph. Rashi will spell out the connection point in a minute, but the thinking right now is Kosalka daitoch miso amiso v'gerushin agerushin. Now that itself is quite vague, but if we look into Rashi, a few lines down from here, Kosakidait of Misa Misa, Hotikotoni Vikulon Shinisu Lachirim Umesu, and it went on to say, O Shinis Almanu, Koi Nami Aresha, that this is a continuation, it's connected to the earlier part of the Mishnayas on Daf Chof Hei Omer Aleph, Dikotoni, where it said there, someone had come and testified, Mace, that her husband died, Horagtiv, I killed him, Horagnu, we killed him, Lo Yisaw Es Ishto. So we saw there, someone had testified that her husband died. The Kotoni, and it says, De Nises Alpiv, De Im Nises Li Acher Alpiv, that if she then went and married someone else based on that testimony, umes hasheni hazeh muteres linose le'edzeh, so that we're connecting information from the Mishnah on Daf Chof Hei Omed Aleph with what we see in our Mishnah v'kulon shenisu l'achirim, based the women, the Mishnah that we learned here spoke about different women. We mentioned before the woman who didn't receive a heter from the sage, the woman who was divorced through an emissary coming from Chutz Laretz, and there's also the case of the woman who was released from her husband based on the testimony of some outsider. So, some outsider testified on Daf Chof Hei Omer Aleph that this woman's husband died. And then this Mishnah Daf Chaf Vav continues the story that that woman who married based on the testimony of that of the witness that her husband died, she married some other man. And then, and in our Mishnah says that amongst the different possibilities are that she became an almona. That means her second husband died as well. Our Mishnah then says, at that point, even though she's a woman that two husbands have died on her, she can then marry the witness that conveyed the information about her first husband's death. Rashi goes on, V'afapi shemesu shnei baleho, tinosin l'shlishi, even though two husbands have died. So that if we're connecting the information from Daf Chof Hei Omer Aleph, the Mishnah there where a witness came and testified about her husband having died, and then the Mishnah here goes on and tells us, well, then she went and married a second husband, and then he died, she can now marry the witness, and this witness would be her third husband. For lo amrinon, and we do not say huchsukazu katlonis shanoisa meis. We don't categorize her of having the status of a katlonis. A katlonis is a woman whose husbands die on her, and a woman like that, the halacha views as dangerous for marriage. However, if only two husbands died, so we don't view her as a dangerous woman to marry. And furthermore, v'gerushin dekotoni nisgarsha koi agerushin deleil hamevi get. Again, we're connecting the two mishnayos on Daf Chof Hei Omer Aleph. We saw a man conveying, an agent conveying a get from abroad, indicating her first husband was divorcing her. And then in our Mishnah here on Daf Chof Vav Amud Aleph, it says, Vinis Garshu, the woman had married a second husband and then was divorced from him. Vashmina dim nisei sliacher ba'oisa get v'girsho hasheni hazeh. And our Mishnah tells us then that if she had married a second husband based on that original divorce document conveyed by the agent, and the second husband divorced her, muteres linosi lemevi gita rishon, that she can then marry the original agent who conveyed the get from abroad. So even though she was divorced twice, Shitas Rashi seems to be a little different than Shitas Tosfos, insofar as that there would be a concern of a woman who was divorced twice not marrying a third time. So if you assume that our Mishnah, which said v'kulon shenisu, the third line from the top of our Omid, you see it says v'kulon shenisu l'acherim v'nizgarshu n'izo shenis almanu, is a connection, is connected to the Mishnah Daf Chof Hei Omer Aleph, as we just demonstrated. So then we raise the following, and we continue in the Gemara. Neimo masnisin delo karevi. We would suggest then that our Mishnah is unlike the opinion of Rebbe. De karevi, for if we were following Rebbe's opinion, Ha'omar, Rebbe has said, betray zimni havio chazaka. Through the repeat of an incident twice, you thereby establish a status. So that we saw on Daf Chof Hei information concerning the woman's husband's dying. Some witness testified mace. She then went and married a second man. And our Mishnah says she then became an almona from the second man. That means two men have died on her. Our Mishnah says she can then marry the original witness who told us the story of her first husband's death. And we're not saying that after two husband deaths, she is considered a katlonis. Well, that would be unlike Rebbe, because Rebbe holds the karebi, who am I betrays him, the havichazoka. Rebbe says that after two times a status is established. The Gemara says, lo. we're not going to conclude that our Mishnah is unlike the opinion of Rebbe. Misa agirushin, v'gerushin amisa. The Mishnah here that describes the second husband dying, that was a second husband who she had married after she had been divorced by the first husband. So you don't have the repeat of any incident twice. And likewise, the woman here who is described as having been divorced, she is a woman who had married this second husband after information concerning her first husband was that he had died. So we don't have, as we said, we won't have any incidents here of two events happening twice to establish a particular status for the woman. We continue. V'kulon mutaris l'vneim o l'achem. Even though we'll say the woman is usher to the sage who couldn't rescind the vow, our Mishnah tells us that the woman is allowed to marry that rabbi's brother. So we have a little chart, a little diagram on the side. You see the starred diagram with a chacham, and we should note, by the way, before we go on, in the Gemara itself, we have a topic heading which introduces a question, Sheila. The topic heading continues, Kan b'mishnaseinu ho'isha muteres la'ach ha'chashud. We saw in our Mishnah that the woman is allowed to marry the brother or the son of the man that she would have otherwise been suspected of having something wrong taking place. So, even though the woman, and again, just to focus on one example to keep things simple, we said the woman cannot marry the rabbi that was unable to rescind her vow, but the woman can marry his brother or his son. Lomo b'mikre shochashad shebo al eishes ish hechashud osu ba'achoisa. Why is it that in a different case where a woman is suspect of having had relations with a particular man, again a married woman having had been fallen under suspicion of having relations with a man, we say there that the man who is suspect of those illicit relations is not allowed to marry her sister. So, just to go over the problem, the rabbi who is under suspicion, so to speak, so the woman is allowed to marry his brother. But when you have a different case of a man suspect of having relations with a married woman, so that man cannot marry her sister. The Gemara. My Shna. Oh, actually, we were looking at a diagram before. So on the side, we have a chacham, and we say asura, the woman is also to that chacham, to the rabbi. But with regard to achiv, muteres. Let's look at the next chart. You have a woman who is chashuda, that's a woman concerning whom we are suspicious that the man in the diagram had relations. We say that the man is also to her mother. So in these both cases, you see a person who is, we'll say, under say a cloud of suspicion, and the relative of that individual in the first case we see is mutter, and in the second case usser. Why the difference? So the Gemara now asks this question. My shno meha desnan. What is different between our Mishnah and the following Tanaic source? Hanitan minho isha, a person who is suspect of having had relations with a married woman. Osir bi'ima uva vita uva achosa. He is not allowed to marry her mother, her daughter, nor her sister. The Gemara answers, Noshi legabi noshi shchichon da'azlon. Women visit one another. So that if a man is suspect of having relations with a particular woman, if he were to marry her mother or her sister, so that very woman concerning whom there is suspicion will appear on the scene. She will visit her mother or her sister on a regular basis. And we thereby recreate these suspicious circumstances and temptations. So we want to avoid that. Gavri, legabi gavri lo shlichon. And in contrast, men don't visit one another very often. So that if one was worried about, let's say, a woman having been eyed by a particular rabbi, and that's why he didn't rescind her vow so that she would become available to him, so we'll forbid that particular relationship. We're not taking any risk by allowing her to marry the rabbi's brother, because that rabbi isn't going to be visiting his brother very often. Inami, another difference. Noshi delo asron shchivoson ahadodi lo kapti ahadodi. So let's take an example. If a man that's suspect of having had relations with a particular woman, so if that man would actually have intimacy with the woman under suspicion, that particular act of intimacy will not prevent him from one day marrying her mother. In other words, in a halachic sense, her mother is not forbidden by his having conducted intimacy with that relative. And therefore, the mother who might be interested in marrying this particular man, she isn't going to act to prevent her daughter's intimacy with this fellow. Her own vested interest will not be affected. Therefore, there's no built-in deterrent in that situation where you have the man suspect, suspicious of having relations with one woman. Her relatives are not going to be viewed as a built-in deterrent to that intimacy. So that if they, let us say, were interested in this fellow, they still will have access to him, even if he does conduct illicit relations with that particular woman, their relative. However, Gavri the Asron Shivason Ahadodi Kapti Ahadodi. So for example, the brother of the rabbi won't allow the rabbi to have relations with the woman, because if she does, she becomes forbidden to him, to the brother of the rabbi. There's a little diagram. You'll notice that we're going to be looking at very soon. But just to go over the last point, the Mishnah had mentioned that the rabbi who was unable to rescind the vow, so the woman is muteres to marry his brother or his son. And the reason for that is that, as we explained, even if the rabbi would visit his brother, if she were to conduct intimacy with the rabbi, she would then become usur to his brother, whom she married. The Gemara asks, "I hachi aviv nami." If that be the case, then the same should be said regarding the rabbi's father. Why does the Mishnah teach that she's mutter to marry the Chacham's brother or son, and it doesn't mention the father? So if we look at the chart, there's a double star on the side. We say a Chacham to whom she is Asura, the rabbi who was unable to annul the vow. That woman, we said, is mutter to marry the Chacham's son, the Chacham's brother. What about marrying the Chacham's father? We explained already why she's mutter in marrying the Chacham's brother, for example. We gave two hesberim. One answer was that the Chacham doesn't visit his brother, so that even if you might be suspicious about her having had some kind of connection, some kind of illicit relations with the Chacham, or suspicion of such, the Chacham, isn't going to be visiting his brother, so that that element of temptation isn't going to arise in the future. Secondly, even if they do visit regularly, the brother of the Chacham has a built-in motivation to prevent any hanky-panky from taking place between the woman and his brother, the rabbi. Because if the woman does have relations with the brother, the rabbi, she will then be usher to be wedded to his brother. What about the Chacham's father? From the Mishnah, it would seem that we're not going to allow her to marry his father. So the Gemara says, that's not true. Lo mibaya ko'omar. The Mishnah is in the lo mibaya framework. Lo mibaya means I don't need to tell you. Lo mibaya aviv. I don't have to tell you about the father. In other words, that she is muteris to his father. The buzz is bonay minay. The rabbi, namely his son, the son would not mizane, would not conduct illicit relations with the wife of his father. The son is embarrassed to conduct an affair with his father's wife. Avol. So that I don't, that point of information, the Mishnah doesn't have to tell you. It's so obvious that she's mutter to his father. Avol benoi de lo bozes oviv mine emolo. But let us say the woman marrying the rabbi's son. And then the rabbi, the father, comes to visit. A father isn't so embarrassed wouldn't be embarrassed in conducting an affair with his son's wife. Here you have Chazal getting into the inner psyche of man. Father-son relations. Son is embarrassed to conduct an affair with his father's wife. A father would not be embarrassed to conduct an affair with his son's wife. So on those grounds, I might have thought that maybe we shouldn't allow the woman to marry the rabbi's son. Because when the rabbi visits, he might be tempted to conduct an affair with his son's wife. And we're trying to avoid that, obviously. Komash Malon, our Mishnah tells us that we allow that marriage anyway. In other words, even though in the deep psyche of man these truths or these phenomena exist, nevertheless we're not going to take that into consideration, and we allow the woman to marry the rabbi's son. As you can see, that concludes the second perek of Yevamos, and now we continue with the third perek. Arbo'o achin shneimem nesuin shtei achoyos. Again, we have a chart that we need to deal with. There are four brothers. We call them Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Two of them are married to two sisters. Umesu hanesuim es achoyos. Reuven and Shimon, who were married to Leah and Rachel, respectively, they died, leaving no children. So you have two sisters that are Yevamos facing the two surviving brothers, Levi and Yehuda. Hareinu cholsos v'lo misyabmos. The Mishnah rules that they are to participate in chalitza, no yibum. The Gemara will explain why. V'kidmu v'konsu yotziu, and if they don't heed this, but in fact marry them, the Mishnah says they shall divorce them. Rebbe Eliezer Oimer, Beishamay Omrim Yekayim, Ubeisil Omrim Yotziu. Rebbe Eliezer says that the point that Tanakama made as a matter of fact in Kidmu V'Konsu Yotziu, Rebbe Eliezer says that is a machloikes Beishamay Beisilol. Beishamay says that Yekayimu, that the marriage can continue, and Beisilol rules that they must divorce. Before we go further in the Mishnah, we glance at the Rashi. The Rashi, Dibra Masil, Arba Achen, V'lo Misyabmos, the first time of the Gemara, Mishum Zika, because of the Zika bond. The Gemara will bring another opinion regarding this, Rashi citing one of the reasons. Dekevon de Trevayo Zikikon, Lahai Ulahai. Since Rachel and Leah are bound, both of them, they came from two separate brothers, so the need for Yibum applies to Leah and to Rachel. Levi and Yehuda are the surviving brothers. Levi, in theory, has a need to do Yibum with Leah and a need to do Yibum with Rachel. So there's a bond. There's something called Zika. But they are two sisters. A person cannot possibly marry two. One man cannot marry two sisters in order to accomplish the mitzvah of Yibum. This is something we've learned at the very beginning of the Masechta. So you have these two women that are bound to each one of the men. As Rashi says, Lahai ulahai, kamo de miyabim, the first brother to do Yibum, he is marrying, if he were to do Yibum, he is marrying the sister of someone who is bound to him. Achos zukukoso is as if you're marrying achos ishto, and achos ishto, sister of one's wife, is totally forbidden. So we're viewing Zika, this connection, as if it has materialized, so that once, if we just use an example, there are several examples you can use here, but Levi, we say, is bound to Leah and Rachel. If he marries Leah in an act of Yibum, but Rachel was also bound to him, so it's as if Rachel is Levi's wife. By his doing Yibum with Leah, it's as if he's marrying his wife's sister. Again, he didn't marry Rachel, but there was a Zika between Levi and Rachel. By Levi marrying Leah, it's as if he's marrying his wife's sister. This, of course, is predicated on the assumption that the concept of Zika, that there is a binding a connection that is a halachic reality. This, of course, is something we've seen has been debated in the past, and we'll continue on that topic later in the Gemara. We continue in our Mishnah, third line. Hoysa achas mehen asura al ho'echod. We had in our example Leah and Rachel. So if one of those women is forbidden to one of the surviving brothers, Isur Erva. So let's say Levi was married to Leah's daughter. So Leah becomes Levi's mother-in-law. Levi cannot do Yibum with an Erva, a forbidden relation. So the Mishnah tells us, Osir ba umutir b'chosa. Levi, then, since he can't even in potential marry Leah, there's no connection between Levi and Leah in a Yibum context. Therefore, Levi can do Yibum with Rachel. Rachel, in effect, is Levi's mother-in-law's sister. Vasheni osir b'shteim. However, Yehuda is prohibited in both of the women. Because, as we said before, each woman represents to the other brother Achois Zekukasai. There's another scenario. If one of the women is Osir to one of the brothers, Isur Mitzvah, the Isur Kedusha, Chayletzes V'loi Misyabemes. So if Levi and Leah are Osir to one another based on an Isur Mitzvah or an Isur Kedusha, now these are terms we've seen in the past. An Isur Derabbanan or an Isur like Grusha to a Kohen. Those are prohibitions that aren't, we'll say, in a total anti-Yibum prohibition. Therefore, we say Chalitza is necessary. Choletzes. But Yibum is out of the question. Hoysa achas mehem asura alze isur erva, vashnia asura alze isur erva. Here we're going to focus again on our examples, this time Levi and Yehuda. Levi is married to Leah's daughter. So Leah is also to Levi, completely also to Levi. It's his mother-in-law. Rachel happens to be Yehuda's mother-in-law. The Mishnah says, "Ha'asura lozeh muteres lozeh." If Leah is also to Levi, well, she's muteres to Yehuda. There's no connection between Leah and Yehuda by virtue of the fact that Yehuda cannot marry Rachel whatsoever. It's his mother-in-law. So there's no Yibum connection, there's no Zika, there's no bond between Yehuda and Rachel. So Levi, by virtue of the fact that he cannot marry Leah, Levi is able to marry Rachel. Yehuda, by virtue of the fact that he cannot marry Rachel based on an Isur Erva, he is able to marry her sister, Leah. And that's what the Mishnah is telling us here. Vasur lazeh muteres lazeh. Vasur lazeh muteres lazeh. Vizuhi shamru, and is this that has been said, achoiso kishi yevimta, two sisters, when they are also co-yevomis, Ocholetzes o misyabemes. There are situations, and this is something we discussed quite extensively in the first perek, that you can have a situation of two sisters that are both yevomes, and one sister will be usher in yibum, and the other sister will be mutter in yibum. We continue now with the Gemara. Before we do the actual Gemara text, we glance at the side. under the Noseh, we're heading Matam Lo Misyabnos. We're going to be asking the question, why is it that Levi and Yehuda, the two surviving brothers of the original four, why is it that they cannot, there is no Yibum option with regard to the two sisters? So we have a marking scheme. You'll notice on the side of Mivneh, the use of triangles as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back and forth, give and take type discussion. So with the triangle point facing up, this will be in the direction of establishing Yesh Zika, that there is a bond. And the bond, as we said before, it's a bond that is viewed as if the subjects of the bond are married to one another. The inverted triangle, Ein Zika, that really this bond is not something that has any halachic significance. And we say there is no bond. The Tamu Isur Yibum B'Mishnah Mishum to Osu Levatel Mitzvahs Yibmin. And the prohibition of the Mishnah is because of a different factor, something that we have learned about in the past, the prohibition of being mevatel, of canceling or voiding the mitzvah of Yibum. When we speak about the mitzvah of Yibum, by the way, take into consideration that chalitza is also part of that mitzvah. The Gemara. Shema Mina, should we conclude Yesh Zika, that between a Yavam and Yavama, between the brother-in-law and sister-in-law, when she is a widow, having been left a widow from a husband that had no children, that there is a bond. The Ein Zika, if there is no bond, Michti, let's look into this matter. Hani Mitre Boti Koasyon, Leah and Rachel, in our example, the two sisters, come from two separate households, from Reuven and from Shimon. Hai Liabem Chada, Vahai Liabem Chada. So, since they're coming from two separate households, and each house, the house of Reuven and the house of Shimon, need to be perpetuated through Yibum, let Levi marry one, and let Yehuda marry the other. Yet our mission says they can't. And hence we're coming to the conclusion that our Mishnah indicates that there is a bond that's formed before the Yibum takes place, so that if Levi marries one of them, he's actually marrying the sister of a woman that is already bound to him. The Gemara rejects this. Li'oilom e'maloch ein zika. I will tell you that there is no bond. Umishum de kosovar, our Mishnah is not allowing for Yibum because of the following consideration. Osur levatel mitzvahs yivmin. One is not allowed to cancel or to create a situation where the mitzvah of Yibum, and we say Yibum again, Yibum slash chalitza, will not be performed. Dilmo adem yabem chad, what we're fearful is if we allow Yibum, what by the time Levi does Yibum with, let us say, Leah, Levi would marry Leah in Yibum. Mayis idach. Yuda, the other brother, might die before doing anything with Rachel. The komavatel mitzvahs yibmin. If Yuda dies before marrying the other sister, Levi, having already married the first sister, he doesn't do any yibum mitzvah with her sister, with the other one. He certainly doesn't do yibum. He can't marry that who is his wife's sister, and he doesn't do chalitza either with her. She, the other woman, the second sister, is an erva, and there's no chalitza either. So by Levi making a move, a yibum move with Leah, he's creating circumstances whereby if Yehuda dies, no mitzvah of Yibum will be done with regard to the second woman. The Gemara asks, "I hachi tlosa nami." Well, if that be the case, why does our Mishnah feature four brothers? The Mishnah could have featured a case of three brothers. Now here Rashi elaborates, and let's take advantage of Rashi, four lines from the bottom, Tlosonami, Maishno denokat arba achim. Why did the Mishnah speak about specifically a case of four brothers where when two die, so two surviving brothers continue? If the let's say the point is that there is a bond, Ashmin and Rabusa, the Mishnah is then telling me a chiddush. The Avagav the Trei Achi Ninu, even though there are two surviving brothers, Velo Alima Zikasoi Dekamo Demiabein, and the bond is not a very strong bond regarding, let us say, the first one. If Levi were to jump the gun, so to speak, he would marry Leah. The bond between Levi and Leah's sister isn't that strong. Let's read that line again in the Rashi. The Apagav the Trei Achininu, Velo Alima Zikasoi Dekamo Demiabim, Demotsinu Lememar, Hahi Ramyo Kame, Vachosa Kame Ochiv, Vafilu Hochi Osir. Since there are two brothers, and each one in potential could marry each one of the sisters, the bond between, let us say, as we say, Levi, if he marries Leah, where the bond between Levi and Rachel isn't that strong because Rachel is available to marry Yehuda. So that the Mishnah is telling us a chiddush, even though the bond isn't very strong, we're still not allowing Yibum. V'afilu ochi osir. V'kol shekein shloish achim shteim en nesuim shtei achoyos umesu v'noflu shteim lifnei zeh shteim asuros. And all the more so if there were only three brothers, two of them died, leaving two sisters and a third surviving brother, meaning only Levi, who's confronting both Leah and Rachel, where both sisters are bound to one brother, there certainly Yibum would be usher. So by telling me a case where Levi and Yehuda survive, two brothers survive, and because of the weak form of Zika, we do not, nevertheless, allow Yibum to take place. All the more so if only one brother survives, where both women are bound to one man, certainly no Yibum will be allowed. As Rashi says, the Travayo Ole Ramya Vizikasu Chamura, since two women, which are two sisters, are both bound to one man, there, that's a stronger bond. V'chinosiv, and if he were to marry, in the case of one surviving brother, if he were married to one of them, Poga Bachosuk Gosu, he's marrying a woman who's clearly a sister of someone that is bound to him. So if you take the line of reasoning that Yesh Zika, I understand why the Mishnah taught the case of four brothers. With that information, namely two surviving brothers and the prohibition of either one from doing Yibum, in the case of one surviving brother, all the more so we would prohibit Yibum because the bond is all the stronger. Ela I mishum bitul mitzvas yivmin, if the prohibition of the Mishnah is based on this concept of osur levata mitzvas yivmin, afilu tlosa nami umesu shnayim anusum shtei achoyus,
three brothers altogether.
Two of them died, leaving two sisters. Shtehen chalzos. Both would do chalitza. Di miyabein chado nafka idoch bevelo klum. The same din of the Mishnah could have been taught, namely Hareilu Cholzos Vilmus Yablos, where Reuven Shimon died, leaving just Levi, and their two sisters, Leah and Rachel. We would say that Levi should do Chalitza with Leah, and do Chalitza with Rachel. Certainly not marry one of them, because that would have been Bittul Mitzvah Yivmin. So if the explanation of the Mishnah is based on Osur Levatel Mitzvah Yivmin, why did the Mishnah feature the case of four brothers? You could have featured a case of three brothers. The Gemara answers, Lo Mibaya Koamrinan. Here you see again this structure, we call the Lo Mibaya structure, where there is information that I don't have to tell you. Lo mibaya tlosa. I don't have to tell you about the case of three brothers. The vadai botla mitzvahs yivmin.
Where if we were to allow yibum with one of them, you're definitely going to be canceling the mitzvah of yibum with the other woman.
Just to go over the example, if you had Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Reuven and Shimon died leaving the two sisters, Leah and Rachel, as widows, and Levi were to do Yibum with Leah, then there's nothing Levi would be doing with Rachel, certainly not marrying her, that's his wife's sister, and not doing Chalitza either. So in the case of the three-brother model, you would definitely be Mevatel Mitzvahs Yibum if we would allow Yibum. Aval Dalid, the Gemara continues, but with four brothers, two of them survive, two dying and two surviving brothers, Lamisa lo chayshinon. I might have thought that this consideration of some of the remaining brother dying, we're not worried about. We shouldn't worry about that. And if we wouldn't worry about Misa, then the halacha would have been, Levi does Yibum with one. Let's say Levi marries Leah. And Yehuda, we're not worried he's going to die. He can do Yibum with Rachel. So that case, had it not been taught, I would have thought not to worry about that. Komash Malon, by teaching the case of four brothers, we're informing you that we are choshesh for Misa. And as a result of our chashash of Misa, we have reason for being concerned with the iser of being mevatel mitzvahs yivmin. So just to go over the last point, the Gemara had asked, if the Mishnah is to be analyzed on the grounds of osur levatel mitzvahs yivmin, so then the Mishnah could have taught a case of three brothers. The Gemara answers, of course. But that is, that case of three brothers, there is definite Bittul Mitzvahs Yivmin. Our Mishnah wants to teach us a bigger Chiddush. Even where there isn't a definite case of Bittul Mitzvahs Yivmin, even where it's a matter of simple doubt, or let's say worry, that one of them might die, and there might be Bittul Mitzvahs Yivmin, even under those circumstances, we do not allow Yibum. Ihachi, the Gemara asks, well, if that's the explanation, then we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Chamisha Nami. Why not set up a model with five brothers, two dying, leaving the two widows who are sisters, and three surviving brothers, and say that no Yibum because of Osur Levatel Mitzvahs Yivmin. Well, in order to come to a case of Bittul Mitzvahs Yivmin, you would have to say that after, let us say, Levi does Yibum with Leah, and he has two brothers, Yehuda and Yisachar, that both would die before any Yibum is done, and that would be your case of Bittul Mitzvas Yibmin. But that's far-fetched. Lamisa v'trei lo chayshinan, the Gemara answers. Concerning the death of two brothers, which would lead to the Bittul Mitzvas Yibmin, that far we're not going to worry about. Therefore, by the Mishnah teaching the case of four brothers, is teaching us the, we'll call it the extreme case, where we are concerned, we'll say, on the grounds of Asur Levata Mitzvas Yibmin, because of the suspicion of one brother dying. And the number four is exactly that, the extreme case. If there were five brothers in this scenario, then we wouldn't have said, Harei Eilu Chotzos V'lo Misyavos. There, we could have allowed Yibum of both Leah and Rachel to have taken place. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a topic heading. Shalosh Achoyos Yivomos Naflu Lifnei Shnei Achim. In this case, we're going to have three sisters that are widows. In each case, their husbands leaving no children. And there are two brothers that survive. So here, take note of the fact that here we have three women confronting two surviving brothers. Obviously, a total Yibum cannot take place. You have one of the brothers would end up being married to two sisters, and that's certainly forbidden. So we will be when you have, as we saw in the Mishnah on Amud Aleph, when you have two brothers and only two sisters, we say there's certainly no Yibum going to take place. Here, Kal Vachomer, no Yibum is going to take place. However, we have to release these women, these sisters, to marry into the Shuk, to marry someone else. So Chalitza is going to be necessary. But how are we going to go about Chalitza? The sukya revolves around the issue of Ma Koicha Shel Chalitza Psula, or Grua. There's a concept here of a weakened, a watered down chalitza. What do we mean by that? So, in general terms, chalitza that is done with a woman that you were not able to marry in the first place, this would constitute a weakened form of chalitza. That's again by general, in general terms. Before we get into the Gemara text, there is also a structural note. A diamond appears, and on the side under our Mivneh heading, Rav will appear in a diamond, and later Shmuel, three lines from the bottom. Rav says, Hashlishis Tzricha Chalitza Mishneim. Rav will tell us that the third woman, in other words, after one brother does Chalitza with one of the sisters, the second brother does Chalitza with the other one of the three sisters, the third sister will need to participate in Chalitza with both men. In other words, she'll have to remove the shoe of both of the brothers. Shmuel says, Echad Chaletz Lekulon. One brother can participate in Chalitza with all three sisters. Now the Gemara. Omar Rava Bar Rav Huna. There's another Girsa. Rava Bar Rav Huna. Omar Rav. Shalosh Achoyos Yevomos. Three sisters that are also Yevomos. They're widows from men that left no children. Shinaflu lifnei shnei achin yivmin. The three sisters fall to Yibum in front of two surviving brothers. We have a little diagram on the side where you see the star. The numbers are the brothers. 1, 2, and 3 are brothers that died. The Aleph, Beis, and Gimel are the wives, the widows. So as far as Rav is concerned, brother 4 will do chalitza with woman Aleph, brother 5 will do chalitza with woman Beis. Now, emtsoyis is literally means middle, but it means the third woman. Vemtsoyis tsricho chalitza mishnehem. Omar le Rabba. So Rabba, not to be confused with Rabba bar Rav Huna. This is Rabba Stam, Rabba without any attached name. He's also known in the Shas as Rabba bar Nachmeni. So Rabba says Midika Amris and Soyis Sricha Chalitza Mishnehem. And note, by the way, this is a question that he's raising. It's a long question. From the fact that you say that the third sister needs chalitza with the two surviving brothers, Kosavris Yesh Zika. You are intimating that the concept of Zika applies, that there is a bond. Vahavya lo chalitza psula. And if only one of the brothers who already did chalitza, if only one of them would do chalitza with the third sister, it would be a chalitza psula. Now, chalitza psula means, in this case, grua, a weak chalitza. The chalitza psula tzorach lachzor al kol achin. And as such, in order to compensate for the weakness of the chalitza done by one brother, so all the surviving brothers have to do chalitza. Ihachi, komaisa nami. Since you're saying there is a bond, and when we speak about Zika, that means that any one woman is the sister of a woman with whom you have a bond. And since this bond exists between all three women and the two surviving brothers, so each one of the chalitzas that needs to be done with any given woman should be done by all the brothers. In order to appreciate this further, we glance at the Rashi. The Rashi that we're going to be looking at is in the narrow lines, approximately the fifth narrow line, Klomar. Midiko Amris Tzricha Chalitza Mishneem. From the fact that you say that Rav says that the third sister needs chalitza from both surviving brothers, Kosavris, you are of the opinion Alimo Mitzvas Zikas Yivmin Lemirmi Atravayu. Alimo has to do with strength, that the strength formed by the bond of the Yivoma with the Yivmin is strong enough to place the need to do chalitza on both of the brothers. V'hach chalitza al-korchach, the chalitza is, by definition, you have to say, chalitza psulahi, kloma grua. And as we explained before, what do we mean by a weak chalitza? Shimrotza liyabim enu yochol, if any one of the brothers, the two surviving brothers, any one of them would want to marry the third sister after each one of the brothers had done chalitza with the two previous sisters, he would not be able to do yibum. The achuis chalutzasohi, the third sister, is the sister of a woman with whom he had done chalitza. That's called achos chalutzasu, the sister of a chalutza. Of a chalitza, meaning the sister of a chalitza with whom you did chalitza. Hilkoch lav me'al yisahi. Therefore, the chalitza that you would do with her sister as well is not considered a chalitza of note. Utzricha lachzor al kulon. She, the third sister, therefore has to seek chalitza from all of the surviving brothers. The lo mifka zika de travayu bechalitza de chada. the bond that she has with those two surviving brothers is not undone, is not canceled with the chalitza of only one of them. Mishum da'alimo zika, the bond between the third sister and the two brothers is strong. The ramyo atravayu, that bond creates a connection between the third sister and the two surviving brothers. And as we said before, those two surviving brothers had already done chalitza with her two sisters, respectively. She, the third sister, cannot be married by either one of the surviving brothers based on her, the third sister, being achos chalutzaso, each one of the surviving brothers having already done chalitza with her two sisters, respectively. So, as we said, she couldn't marry them. Therefore, the chalitza that any one of them would have done is a weak, would have been a weak chalitza. And that weak chalitza done by one of them is not capable of undoing the zika bond that exists from the time of the husband's death, their brother's demise. So that is the explanation of chalitza grua, chalitza psula, and thereby necessitating her, the third sister, of receiving chalitza from both surviving brothers. But now Rabbo's question is, why are we saying that only the third sister needs chalitza from both brothers? A similar logic applies to the first sister as well. Komaisa, Rashi continues, Komaisa, Shtayim Rishonos Nami Livul Chalitza Mishneim. Sisters Aleph and Beis in our diagram should also need Chalitza from both 4 and 5. In other words, Aleph should need Chalitza from 4 and 5, and Beis should need Chalitza from 4 and 5. The Chalitza Sanami Lav Ma'al Yasehi, the Chalitza from one of them, let's say number 4 would want to do an exclusive chalitza with Aleph. In other words, Aleph would receive chalitza just from 4. That's not a strong chalitza. If Aleph wanted to marry, and here you see this concept of weak chalitza being based on the inability to marry. For if 4 would want to marry Aleph, he wouldn't be able to. Because 4 is bound also to her sister. So that marrying Aleph would be a problem of marrying the sister of Zukukoso, Achoy Zukukosoi. So Rabbo's question to Rabbo Bar Rav Huna is, why are you saying that only the third sister needs chalitza from both brothers from 4 and 5? The first and second sisters also would need chalitza from both 4 and 5. So now we turn back to the Gemara text. The answer. And notice, this answer lasts a couple of lines. In the Nofel Bevas Achas Hochinami, if the three sisters became Yevomis simultaneously, then we would say this particular logic. We would apply what you are implying in your question, that each woman would need chalitza from both surviving brothers. Rashi explains, if they came at one time to do chalitza, if they came together. So we look at Rashi, Bevasachas, Klomar, in Bo Lachlois Kachas. If they came to do chalitza once, Shim Shalois, Spiko Rishono Lachlois, Ad Shinofla Gamashin Vashlishis. If the first one didn't do any chalitza with 4 nor 5, until, in fact, all three sisters were widowed. So Rashi continues, Hochinami dekulin tzrichas lachzor achar kol achin, that each one of the women, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, would need chalitza from both surviving brothers. So we go back to the Gemara text. Eden nofel bevas achas, hochinami. And as Rashi explains, slightly different than the way we explain, but that means that if no one had come to do chalitza until all three were coming to do chalitza, then the need for chalitza from both surviving brothers for each one of the women would be necessary. Lo tzricha, the nofel bazu acharzu. The ruling of Rabo Barav Huna is a case where the second woman comes to request chalitza after the first sister already had chalitza done. Noflo chado cholatz lo Reuven. Let's say that the surviving brothers' names are Reuven and Shimon. So the first of the sisters came to receive chalitza. She came to Reuven, and Reuven did chalitza with her. Nofla idach, cholatz lo Shimon. After Reuven did chalitza with the first woman, the first of the sisters, the second woman came to Shimon, the other surviving brother, and that second woman received chalitza from Shimon. Nofla idach, the third woman, she now comes for chalitza. Cholatz lo hai mifka zikoso. Cholatz lo hai mifka zikoso. The third woman would do chalitza with Reuven, and that chalitza would undo any bond between him and the third sister, and Shimon would do chalitza with her, undoing any bond between Shimon and that particular third sister. Let us look at Rashi. Rashi, on the second line under the Gemara text, Noflo lochado, noflo cholatz lo Reuven, v'chalitza k'sheira hoisa. With Reuven doing chalitza to the first sister, that's a solid, full-fledged chalitza. Based on the analysis we mentioned before, she'im rotza yochol liabem. Had he wanted to, Reuven could have done yibum with her. Noflo idach cholatz lo Shimon. V'gamzuk shera shim rotza miyabem. Had Shimon wanted to do yibum with the second sister, he would have been able to do so. The ein kana chosukuka, there is no problem of the second woman being the sister of a zikuka. Shekvar cholza achosa kodem nefilas zu. The chalitza between her sister had taken place before she, the second sister, had been eligible for Yibum to begin with. So that once chalitza is done with the first sister, she's not zukuka anymore. She's released. There's no bond whatsoever. So that when the second sister comes to Shimon for chalitza, that's a full-fledged chalitza because Shimon could have married her. Nofla shlishis, I boy livumi lomotsi. With regard to the third sister, after Reuven and Shimon had both done chalitza with the third woman's two sisters, Reuven and Shimon would not be able to marry that third sister. The achos chalutzas shneim hi, that third sister is the sister of the two women who already received chalutz chalitza from these two men, each one respectively. Ubevlo klum nami lo nafka, and without anything, meaning no chalitza as well, she does not go free. The achos chalutza eino elo midivrei soif. From this concept of the sister of a chalutza, which the third woman happens to be, is an isur derabonan. Therefore, with regard to the two surviving brothers, each one will do chalitza, because any one chalitza that they do is weak. If he were to want to marry her, he wouldn't be able to. So that there's a, we'll say there's a equal strength between the chalitza and the zika that does exist. And hence, the chalitza that each one of the two surviving brothers do with the third sister is enough to release her. We continue in the Gemara. All of this analysis is based on the concept of zika, of some type of bond existing. In fact, we mentioned at the beginning that if all three sisters would approach the two brothers for chalitza at the same time, so each one would need a chalitza from both brothers. And this is a point that we saw at the beginning of Rashi, in the narrow lines. If we just read those lines again in the Rashi, Klomar, Midiko Amris, Tzricha, Chalitza Mishneim, from the fact that we said the third sister needs chalitza from both brothers, Kosavris, Alimo, Mitzvah, Zikas, Yivmin, Lemir Miyatravayu, that the bond that exists between that woman and the two brothers is strong enough to make her connected to both of them. Va'achalitza al-Korcha, Chisa Psula, and as we said, that was any one brother's chalitza would have been a weak chalitza. The whole analysis that we've been pursuing since we began this sukkah is based on that there is a bond, and in asking the pointing out that if the three sisters approached the two brothers at the same time for chalitza, each, even the first sister, we pointed out, wouldn't be able to receive a singular chalitza, because each sister is achos zukukoso, is the sister of the other one who is bound. That is all predicated on this analysis of zika, of a bond. And all of this is brought in the name of Rav, who appeared earlier in a diamond. The Gemara asks, V'homa Rav ain't zika, but Rav doesn't hold from a bond in the first place. So how is this whole sukkah being presented predicated on zika when Rav himself doesn't hold from zika? The Gemara answers, L'divrei ha'oimer yesh zika ko'omar. The sukkah is being presented by Rav through the eyes of someone who holds that there is a bond. In other words, Rav himself holds ein zika. And by holding that, when one of the sisters of when you have three sisters and two surviving brothers, so by on the grounds of let's say ein zika alone, forgetting about the issue of bittul mitzvah yivin, which we mentioned before, on those grounds alone, one of the surviving brothers could marry any one of the sisters. Since the sisters come from separate households, by marrying one, he's not marrying achos zukukaso, the sister of someone that's bound, because there's no bond. However, the Gemara that we learned now, which precluded that possibility, is based on the opinion that holds zika, but not that Rav himself accepts that. We continue in the Gemara. Ushmul Omar Echod Choleitz Lekulon. That in this very scenario of three women approaching two brothers, two surviving brothers, one can do chalitza for all of the women. The Gemara asks, now note that this is a question, it's a long question, takes us to the third line from the top of Chof Zayin Amud Aleph. Michti, Shamino Leila Shmuel, we have on record Shmuel holding the Omar Chalitza Ma'al Yaboinon, that when chalitza is done, it has to be a solid chalitza. And this idea we already discussed at length. A solid chalitza is a chalitza done with a woman that you could have otherwise done yibum with. If it's, however, a woman that you could not have done yibum with her, the chalitza that you do with her is considered a chalitza psula, or chalitza grua, a weak chalitza. And Shmuel requires chalitza malya. So when you have three sisters that fall to two brothers, how can you say that one brother does chalitza with all of the women? Could he marry all of the women? Certainly not. So how can the chalitza done with one brother for all the women be effective? Now, where do we see Shmuel, in fact, saying that you need chalitza ma'aliyah? D'yomar Shmuel. We continue at the top of Chof Zayin Amud Aleph. Here's a case, and we need a chart for this case. The chart, you can see, is noted by the star on the side, in the margin. There are three brothers. There's Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven is married to two wives. Shimon is married to two wives. Reuven and Shimon die, leaving no children. Amongst the wives, Reuven and Shimon, there are sisters, and their names are Leah and Rachel. So with that chart in mind, you have Levi as the surviving brother. Shmuel says the following law: Cholatz la'achayos lo niftamu tzoros. If Levi were to do chalitza with Leah and Rachel, that would not release the co-wives. The chalitza done with two sisters is a weak chalitza, hence not strong enough to release the co-wives. So now, with that information, and maybe we'll look at Rashi as well, at the top, cholatz l'achoyos, shtei achoyos shenoflu lefonov, mishnei achim. Two sisters, Leah and Rachel, that fall to Levi in a Yibum scene, coming from Reuven and Shimon. V'chol achas tzoros imo, each one having a co-wife. V'chol atz l'chois, Lufthus was saying, if Levi does chalitza with the sisters, it doesn't release the co-wives. Hayo v'boi livumi lo motzi, had Levi wanted to do Yibum with the two sisters, he wouldn't have been able to do so. Those are the sisters, one cannot marry two sisters. Rather, what is expected is that Levi does chalitza with the co-wives, v'yiftru achoyos, and that will release the sisters from the yibum bond. V'achagav, the tzoros nami avim boy lo havim yavim, even though, technically speaking, if Levi wanted to marry both of those co-wives, he wouldn't have been able to do so. Miu kal Isuram Mishalachoyos. Their level of prohibition is lower than the prohibition of two sisters. Lukach, af chalitzasa mishubachos mishalachoyos vachim forsh lekamah. Therefore, the chalitza done with the tzoros is better, stronger, and that's what will be explained later on. So now, with this in mind, Shmuel requiring Chalitza Ma'alya
How can Shmuel suggest that in the previous case,
remember we had five brothers, three of them dying, leaving three sisters? How can Shmuel say that one of the two surviving brothers that we named Reuven and Shimon, how can we say that it's enough for Reuven to do chalitza with all three surviving sisters, surviving widows that are sisters? The question continues in the Gemara text. Having noted that Shmuel requires chalitza malya, heicha dekaimu chalitza de Shimon, chalitza ksheira, where Shimon is around, he's the second surviving brother, and not having done any chalitza whatsoever, chalitz la Reuven chalitza psula, would you suggest that Reuven should handle the chalitza of all of them, when after doing the first chalitza, Shimon is around who hasn't done any chalitza yet? His chalitza is certainly stronger, is more effectual than the chalitza done by Reuven. So why does Shmuel say that it's enough for Reuven to do chalitza with all of the women? Let's take a look at Rashi. He explains this a little more. First narrow line, Hecho de kaimo chalitza de Shimon chalitza k'shera lachlotz l'shnia shuloch alas rishona. After Reuven did chalitza with the first of the sisters, Shimon is there who hasn't done any chalitza yet. Cholatz la Reuven chalitza psula b'tmiha. Reuven shecholatz l'rishona. V'hav yohach achotz chalitza. So after Reuven does chalitza with the first woman, the second woman is considered the sister of Reuven's chalitza. It's called achotz chalitza. Could Reuven marry her? No. V'lo chalitza ma'al yehi. Kiddush Shimon, it's not... The chalitza done by Reuven with the second woman wouldn't be as good as Shimon's chalitza, the Zika Greitza. He, the bond there is a weak bond. Namely, the bond between the second woman and Reuven is a weak bond. So how can the chalitza be effective? We continue in the Gemara. The Gemara basically says everything we've said is right. My echot cholitz lekulon nami dekomar. When Shmuel said that one brother does chalitza with all of them, it only means I am tzois. It means he does chalitza on his own with the third woman. In other words, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven does chalitza with the first woman. In our chart on the previous omid, Reuven will do chalitza. Reuven is, we'll call, number four. He does chalitza with Aleph. Shimon will do chalitza with Beis. And Reuven will do chalitza with Gimel. The Gemara asks, how can you say that that's pshat in Shmuel? V'hal kulon komar. But Shmuel said that one brother, Reuven, does chalitza with all of them. The Gemara answers, Kevon de Rubo Gabe, since the majority of the sisters, two of the three, are done by Reuven, Kori Le Kulon. The term Kulon is used. The Iboy Esemo, Ki Komar Shmuel Chalitza Mayobinon. Another approach to this matter is that when did Shmuel say that you need to have a solid Chalitza, a full-fledged Chalitza? Hanimili Lemiftar Tzorasa. That is like we saw before in the chart on this Amid, just in the upper part of this page, where there was a co-wife that needed to be released as well. Avol Miftara Nafsha Potra. But when it comes to the woman herself who participated in the Chalitza, even if it happens to be a Chalitza Psula or a Chalitza Grua, it nevertheless is effective to release the woman herself. We take a look at the Rashi. Avo miftero nafsha potra b'chalitza b'koldehu. Hilkoch echot choleitz l'gimel hechot l'lekot tzoros b'dayo. Therefore, when you go back to the case on Chavovo Mitbeis, where you had three sisters confronting two brothers, if each one of those sisters was a lone wife, there were no co-wives in the in that scenario. So, in fact, according to the second approach, Shmuel will stick to his guns and say that one of the two brothers, one brother, is enough for him to participate in Chalitza with each one of the sisters. Of course, we're not involved with releasing a co-wife as well. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.